session number 22077, Reel 11.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 11. So you're on your way back from the Felix Russell.
So?
And you've been in Calcutta and you've now left there.
Cape Town.
Cape Town, sorry, before Cape Town. I was thinking Cape Town.
Yep.
And you joined a convoy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We shot, we sunk a German submarine on the way out, one of the Navy boats, and they picked up the crew. We didn't hear much about that. We called in a place called Takoradi on the Gold Coast, as it was then. We were not allowed ashore. And I've never known so many mosquitoes. It really was, we were glad to get away from the place, actually. we came into Gibraltar, and the war in the desert had just finished. We could have come through the canal, actually, but instead of going, however. General de Gaulle and Churchill came round the ship in a little sloop. And I can remember it now. The French crew, because this was a Felix Roussel, was a French liner. The crew were French, most of them. And the French chaps all sang the Marseillaise, and they were all in tears. And de Gaulle, I can see him now, he's standing like a ramrod, you know, he's a tall man. We left Gibraltar and we came home. And we came to a place called Gourock in Scotland.
Do you know what date you got home?
No, but if you just wait 1 second, can you switch off for a second?
So that would be about what date?
11th of June, 1943.
Right.
And I was then, I had leave for a month, and then I was posted to the 2nd Battalion. Mm-hmm. The 2nd Battalion were at Catterick, and we stayed there a short while, and then we went down to Colchester, mm-hmm. and from Colchester we came down home.
To Bristol.
Yeah, I came home on leave again, and I remember very well the first night we had an air raid at Bristol, and to us it wasn't very funny. They had a lot of air raids at Bristol at the time, and I'd hoped. Oh, I'm sorry, I've gone on a bit time. When we came back home after Gourock, we had a terrible time getting to Bristol on the train. It was packed, and we stood up most of the way. I had to go into Clevedon. The reason was I hadn't told my mother that we were coming home in case she got upset, and I told my adopted parents that I was coming home, and they asked me to go down there first of all. When I got there, after getting off at Yatton and taking all our baggage over the railway bridge, and I was in trouble because I had only had one hand, and my daughter is, well, little one. We came to Clevedon, we met Mr. Izzard and Mrs. Izzard, my mum and dad, and Dad Izzard said, "You better go straight back to Bristol, Mick, because she knows you're coming home. I don't know who told her, but she knows. If you don't go straight away, she's going to..." So off we went. We went back to Bristol, and I remember the coach journey coming back. My daughter was playing with an American Black Soldier's medals. You know, I can remember it all the way home. And he was quite tickled about this. We came to Bristol and went up the Chessels, as we called it, in Bedminster. And we met a Mrs. Bevan, who lived next door to us. We didn't know her then, but then she was a cripple, and she came up with us. And everyone was surprised. Another lady came up and said, "Aren't you Harold Metcalf?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "I'm your cousin Beryl, whom I hadn't seen for years." And they said, "Is this your wife?" Because they all expected I'd married an Indian girl. They expect, you know, this it was. We told everyone who was expecting me with an Indian wife. We settled in, and I said the first night we had an air raid in Bristol, and we were in the air raid shelter. My mother showed us what we had to do, and I got out. I thought I'd try and help the people in the street, but they wouldn't have it. They sent me back. You know, they said we'd had enough.
Was Bristol hit that night?
Pardon?
Was Bristol hit that night?
Yes, oh yes, very badly. I don't know quite what happened where, but it was hit. I think they had an awful time. That's the only time I knew in Bristol, because I went away shortly after. And also, I was waiting to go back to the depot at Colchester. You know, I had no uniform. as only had shorts and shirts. And whilst I was up by the Hen and Chicken pub, two military policemen approached me and asked me what the hell I thought I was doing. And I said that I told them what the situation was. And they said, you can't walk about Bristol like that. I said, what, this time of the year, it's just a job, you know, sort of business. Anyway, they told me to go to the depot that was at that Horfield, and I didn't know where the depot was in those days. I'd never been there. And they gave me a suit of clothes, and then I went back to my regiment, 2nd Battalion. Then I went to Colchester. We then went down to Winchester. And whilst I was there, they sent me to the Cottage Hospital to get my hand manipulated.
How was your hand now? I mean, it was
a hook.
Right.
I had no feeling in the hand at all. Well, I must tell you this now, because I was put on pullings, and we had a thing called pullings, pulse, urinate, la, la, la. And I was graded right down, and I thought I was going to get my discharge because I couldn't use my hand at all. I could still teach things, but I couldn't use my hand. Anyway, they sent us down to Winchester. They sent me to the Cottage Hospital. They put my hand in a clamp and broke down the joints because they thought it was, you know, and then I used to have electric treatment every day. It put my hand in this water, and I didn't think it was doing me any good. Then I had a Wicklow on this finger, and it burst, and it went right through my hand, and I felt tingling in it. When I came out, the next evening it was, I went to church in Newport, and I was walking in when this plane came over, a German plane, and we had a battery of ATS girls on the island, and they shot it down. And the people were... And of course, I'm watching this, you see, and I feel my finger go like this. And that was the beginning of my recovery, actually.
Where was this, Newport, Isle of Wight?
Isle of Wight, yes. Why? Sorry, we'd gone over there from
Winchester.
Winchester, yes. Right. And I had a soft... Then they gave me a soft ball after that to keep squeezing, you know. Now, at the time... I don't like saying this because I'm still a Gloucester man, but when we got back to the regiment, 2nd Battalion, we were more or less ostracised. We were not allowed to talk about the Burma campaign at all.
Was that because of a sort of sense of shame about how it had gone?
I don't think so. I don't quite know what it was, but I mean, it was the first big business, you know, the retreat it was. Having said that, I don't know why, but we were not allowed to talk about it. And it got so bad that there was only the 13 of us used to sort of get together and chat. So in the end, they said they were all going to transfer except one man. Now, I didn't want the transfer. Not really. I didn't want to. But I knew I couldn't go on like this. It wasn't on at all. And we were under canvas at the time. Our headquarters was the Undercliff Hotel at Shanklin. And I went there one day and I spoke to my commanding officer, my company commander, and I told him that quite a lot of the men were considering transferring, and I said, I'm feeling in the same position. He wasn't very pleased about it, but 11 of us transferred to the military police. 10 of us, and one went to the paratroops. Now, I wasn't able to go with the rest of the chaps because I wasn't fit enough at the time. So I stayed there a few weeks. I trained with the mortar platoon just the same. And then I was graded back to A1 and I transferred. I went to a place called Ashvale at Aldershot. Keogh Barracks, K-E-O-G-H. It was a funny thing because... The Hutman Barracks, they weren't real huts, they were huts, the military police were in the depot, what was the Royal Army Medical Corps depot. When I arrived there, the RSM was at the gate, and my chum John was with me, and the RSM said, any of you fellas play instruments? You know, we always were very careful about being asked these things, you know. And John said, I play a saxophone, and says he plays the trombone and bass, and he said he's a singer as well. Step aside, you two, the three other chaps as well from another regiment, And he said, after we'd been introduced to the colonel and all the rest of it, he said, the position is this. You all drop your ranks immediately. You're all bound to private. You have to go back to private to join the military police. He said, but RSM Melocrino is leaving today, and we have to form another band. George Melocrino was an RSM. So we formed the band up, and that was it. We had actually proved a wonderful thing for me, actually. Once there, they had a boxing tournament. Now, I used to be the middleweight scrapper in my regiment, and I had not boxed for a year or so. And with the hand, I didn't know quite what was going to happen. Chris Fudge, he was our welterweight, and I was a middleweight. And he said, what do you think about it, Mick? And I said, well, I'm not very keen, not now. He said, well, I'm going in anyway. So I said, all right, I'll come. And I boxed, and I couldn't tell you the joy I had when I hit the bloke first with my left hand and nothing happened, you know what I mean? Anyway, after that...
So what sort of training did the military police give you? And when you went to the shop, it must have been quite a different sort of place to being in the Gloucesters.
I mean, what can I say? I cannot believe it. When I arrived there, the day I arrived, behind the barracks there was a huge hill. And there were these blokes on motorcycles going up this hill, you see, and over the top, two or three squads while we were standing about there. And I said to the sergeant who was there, I said, what happens there? He said, oh, they're on their third day of training, son, you know. I was a sergeant still then, and I thought, my God, already on motorbikes doing this sort of thing. We went to the mess. Those of us who were sergeants had our tea, and then we were told we had to strip our uniform and go in with the probationers. When we got down to the probationers' place, Sergeant Bingham, he came up and he talked to all of us, and he said, you, that's me, you will be the squad blue stripe. You go away to the tailors and get a blue stripe on your uniform. I said, what's that supposed to mean then? Because I'd been a sergeant for quite a while. And there were two sergeant majors who had already ducked as well. And he said, well, it means that when I'm not here, you're in charge of them. Fair do. I said, that's okay. And actually, there were two of us then who just got our first medal, 1939-43 star, as it was then, and our Burma star. So there were four of us in the section with medals, and that puts in quite a different category to some of the blokes. No, I don't mean to be big-headed, but that it was. And
what were the other chaps in the military police like then?
You mean the boys in the military police or those coming with us to the military police?
Or those who are already in the military police, yeah. Because were they not going on active service?
Oh, well, yes, every week. Every week. How can I put this? I suppose I was fortunate, really. Being in the band helped a lot. But I was also a physical training instructor. That was my job at the depot. I was an assistant physical training instructor. I did a boxing course at Aldershot, and then I wasn't able to box in novices because I'd done this course. But we played at dances all over the place. And on one occasion, the Nedder Hall Band were going to play at G Company ATS at Blackdown, and they couldn't attend, and they asked if the military police could take it over from them. And we went there, quite surprisingly, there was a girl there called Princess Elizabeth. She's now our queen, but she was on a second lieutenant then during her training there. And she was at the dance that night. In fact, when I wrote to the queen, I mentioned the fact when she wrote about our diamond wedding. However,
what were the military police like then? What were the chaps in that like? Because did they go into action? I mean, they weren't fighting troops, were they?
They were the first troops on the beaches.
Were they?
Yeah.
Right. So they weren't.
When D-Day came, they were the first troops on the beach.
Right.
I wasn't there at that time, but I heard all about it later on from friends of mine, and of course we read it in our journal. Yeah. They directed traffic and all that sort of thing immediately.
What sort of training did they do then?
At depot? Physical, mostly. our physical training was really, really strict. And we used to climb a huge tree and get on this thing and slide down. And Blitz was scared to death. And I always remember the two in command. He always used to come with his gaiters on. Can I go up, Corporal? And he'd go every day, he'd go and I would do this. But the training was very strict, very strict. The battle courses we did for such thing, motorcycling to start with. We had huge Harley Davidsons, and they were big bikes. And you had to go through these little, these snakes, they called them, dug in the ground. And then we went on to Norton's, which made things much easier. They were much easier to manhandle. But you'd had military police training, all the rules of evidence and things like that, but not to a great extent. So that only went to the special investigation branch later. But the men were taught road traffic and all the rest of it, you know. And I did the training with the lads just the same. I did all my training. And one morning we had to go to Guildford from where we were on our motorbikes training. And what's the name of that place? It suddenly goes right off the cliff. It will come back to me. I can't remember. And the military police officer who took us out that day, he said, "Gentlemen, it's a bit icy down here today, so I'll allow you to put your feet down off your motorbike." He went down and broke his leg. So that was that. The whole thing was cancelled and we had to go back to camp. And we did it again another day and it rained. And I remember going, I was in such a tears, mud from the bloke in front of me came and stuck right on my forehead there. And when we got back that day, two of the girls said, "We'll wash your uniform for you because we all had denim." It was a very, very hard course. It really was. And that was intensive for 6 weeks. But we got men in every week. We had different squads. So during the time I was there as a physical training instructor, girls as well we had, because the ATS were also. And I used to get a squad of 35 to 40 every hour. Every hour. From 9 o'clock till midday and from 2 o'clock till 5. So that's 6 a day, yes? So you imagine how many men went through my hands, never mind about the other instructors, during the year I spent at the depot. And I thoroughly enjoyed my training time. And then I went on this boxing course. And whilst I was there, I met a sergeant major whom I'd known before. And he said, "Why don't you transfer to the PT Corps then, Mick? You've always been mad on PT." So I thought, well, that's a good idea. He said, "You'll be a sergeant before you know where you are." Then they published an order about special investigation branch, who were all civilian policemen. And what you said just now struck a chord with me. They had a Major Campion, who was a superintendent from Scotland Yard. He formed the branch at Aldershot. He was the first man killed on the beaches, Major Campion, the only SIB bloke who was killed that day, Major Campion, the first one. And
so what was the idea of the SIB?
Special Investigation Branch, like the CID, right, who investigated crime. Military policemen did not do that. They only kept order, if you know what I mean. You know, they go to the pubs and see that the blokes, you know, that sort of thing. Okay. Quite a job, believe me, but the SIB was totally different.
Right.
Okay. The first year, I worked hard, and they had an Eisteddfod in Bristol in 1964. And I approached the colonel, and he said, "Well, it's a bit difficult, Metcalf, getting you to Bristol, especially at this time. Things were getting towards D-Day," but I didn't know this, nor did anybody else. And he said, "I'll tell you what, when is this date?" And I told him when I was going to sing, and I remember it well because I wanted to practice. And the two songs, one was a set piece called "To Julia." My wife's name's Julia. Shut not so soon. Anyway, the other one I sang, I think it was Sorrento or something. But the thing is, I wanted to learn this "To Julia." And there was a Lance Corporal of all names, Smith. He was a professor of music, LRAM, BAM, all this. Lance Corporal in the section. He had permanent staff, and I went to him, and he said, "Oh, yes, I'll teach you. But you've got to do exactly what I tell you. Now, I know what happens on these things, he said to me. I can see him now, quite pompous. We got on very well later on. But we went up and he said, right, sing this scale. And I sang the scale and he said, you've done a lot of singing. And I said, yes, I've been a singer all my life. He said, well, now, this piece of music, you must know this right from the start. It says, shut not so soon. I want you to sing that just as you would normally. And then you take the biggest breath you ever took in your life, because you then sing, the dull-eyed night has not as yet begun to make a seizure on the light or to seal up the sun, and you have to sing that in one breath. Do you understand? And I'm saying, yes, you know, because he was really good. He really was wonderful. And he made me recite both the things I was doing, recitation before I ever started. And then the colonel, when I spoke to the colonel about it, he said, well, the only thing I can do, Metcalf, he said, I'd love you to go. He said, but the only way I can get you to Bristol is for you to take two prisoners. Now, there are two men due to go to Bristol on that Saturday before, on that Saturday before you sing in the afternoon. So he said, I'll get the date put back to Friday so that you'll be free to do what you have to do once you get to Bristol. When I got to Reading, up from Corchester, the train came in, and I'd already explained to the station master, I was in uniform, of course, and RMP on my arm, and
prisoners with you?
No. I had to pick them up there from another fellow. This was the point. And I said, where are they? And the bloke said, they're in the guards van. They're playing cards, you know, with these two blokes. Well, I nearly cried. There were two of my regiment, two from the Gloucesters. And I got there and said, God, what are you doing here, mate? You know, what soldiers do. I couldn't believe it. And the two policemen had to go back to Aldershot, and I had to take them into Bristol. They were handcuffed. I got in a coach with them, and they said, what are you in for? He said, well, I had a bit of a fracas at a pub, and this woman set into me, and he said there were noise about, and I got into trouble. I didn't do anything, mate. Really, I didn't. He's telling me, and I said, I don't want to know, but what are you? The other bloke was also in the same fracas, apparently. It's a funny old world, Dixon and Brown. And we chatted all that. I said, I'll take your handcuffs off. I don't want any trouble. Don't worry, Mick, you won't. And I didn't. We got off the station at Templemeads, and there was a sergeant and a corporal there. They said, you have to come with us, corporal. And I took these blokes. And they took them off me, and they signed the usual handover form. And I went to Warrell Road in Clifton, which was our military police depot at the time, whoever was there. I reported in, and the officer said, well, what's happening, Metcalf? And I told him, I said, I've been sent, really, because I'm singing in the Eisteddfod tomorrow. And he said, oh, I see. Well, you'd sing the Eisteddfod, and then you come back on Sunday morning. Do you understand? I said, yes, sir. I went to the Eisteddfod. Julia was pregnant from my son, actually, at the time. And my mother and my schoolgirl friend came with me. We went to lunch with them yesterday, funny enough, Tearflow, and her daughter. But the thing was, there were 15 men in the tenor section who were going to sing a song called Sorrento, which was favourite at the time, and I was also going to sing Sorrento for my ordinary piece, you know, not the set piece. But I've never forgotten when these adjudicators came on, and I said, oh, Smithy had told me, he said, I know one of the adjudicators, Mick, and if you don't sing it the way I tell you, you won't have a chance. So I was about 11th on. There were 30 tenors altogether, but 15 were singing this. Anyway, my mother sat there, and she said, how are you feeling, son? And I said, well, a bit worried. I've never done anything like this before, except when I won a Carol Levy show in Bristol years before. His brother Cyril was doing it at that time at the Empire. And I can't forget this day. My turn came. There were some chaps, had I been them, I wouldn't have bothered, if you know what I mean. They were not singers at all. And I suppose it was fair enough. It was wartime. There weren't many blokes about. Then one chap came on, and he was a Welsh tenor, and he was lovely. He sang beautifully. And my mother said, how are you feeling? I said, well, except for him, I'm not worried at all. Incidentally, he sang Shut Not So Soon. the dull-eyed note. I knew it straight away, and I got up there and sang it. And it, to cut a long story short, at the end, the adjudicator said, the winner is this chap from Wales, and the runner-up is Lance Corporal Metcalfe of the military police. He said, and I do wish to say this to everyone in the hall, they were the only two people who sang it properly. You know the words are shut not so soon, and everyone should take a breath there. And it's funny, we were the only two who was able to do it. And Smithy was quite delighted when I got back. Well, the next morning, I reported, I walked from Ashton, where I lived in the Chessels, and my mother was there at the time, and I walked up to Warrell Road at Clifton, which was quite a jank. And when I got there, he said, well, now, what I want you to do is to go out with this sergeant. This will be the beat from here to Temple Meads Station. And you know what to do. Well, I didn't know what to do, really, because I'd never done any beat patrol. The sergeant said, don't worry, son, no problem, you know. And we came up the road somewhere in Clifton. He said, hang on a minute, we go in here. We went in, had a cup of coffee, didn't pay, you know, the usual drill. By the time I got to Temple Meads, I was longing to go. We drank coffee in about 16 places on the way down. He said, oh, this happens all the time. Well, we went down. It was just a beat. There was nothing much about on a Sunday anyway. There were some chaps on the railway station going back. And then I came back with him. And I got back, and the captain said, well, that's all right, Metcalfe. You can shove off now till you go back to tonight. And I was due back. What struck me forcibly was when I got to Temple Meads Station, there wasn't another soldier about. And normally when I came on leave to Bristol, you couldn't really move in Bristol. And I thought, there's a funny business. I knew nothing about D-Day, but that was the next day. But you understand me, I didn't know this. No one about... It was so... Really, it really yeah. was. Nobody knew. And I remember going back that day, and it was night time, and I could see the German planes, you know, coming over. And we never had any trouble at Aldershot, fortunately, but we could see the bombs in London. And I got back there, and I went back to my normal routine. And then Freddie Miles, the captain in charge of SIB, I had been to him before. I said, what is this about the SIB? And he said, oh, all civil policemen, Metcalfe. No, he was a civilian policeman in Bristol, an inspector. And just before Christmas, 44, he came to me. He always just come to the dance, and he said, by the way, Metcalfe, are you still interested about the SIB? I said, well, yes, but I'm supposed to be going to the PT Corps in January. He said, now look here, if you want to go in the SIB, I'll talk to the colonel. Ever since then, Daddy Viney, his name was, a very, very, very nice officer, the colonel, commandant. Had very little to do with the troops, really, at all. The RSM did all the work, but he said, I'll have a word with the colonel. So my transfer to the military, to the Corps of Physical Training, as they were then, APTC, was stopped, and I went on a course in January.
That's January 45.
January 45.
And you went to do the Special Investigations
right.
course,
yeah. And Fred Miles was my instructor, and there were only two non-civilian policemen on the course. There were 36 of us on the course.
Where was this course?
At the Aldershot Depot, at Keele Barracks. I mean, he was the instructor, Fred, ex-detective. And very intense. It should have been 3 months, and it had to be condensed into 1 month. They were needing them over there, yes? Well, I'm not joking. I have never worked so hard in my life. You know, I was getting on a bit then. Most of these chaps were young men. And Frankie Head, the other lad, he'd also been serving in the Yorkshire, one of the Yorkshire regiments, and he and I really got down to it. And I took Sinatogen. I'd been warned about this, so I took Sinatogen. Every day I'd go to the NAFI at tea break, 10:30, and have this. It was horrible, just like dead men's bones it was, but it must have done me the world of good, because I used to come home every Saturday and go back Sunday night, and my wife would question me on all that I had done during the week. And it was all written out, by the way. Not like it is now, all given out to you and, you know, all on typed out and so on. So it was good, really, because you remembered a lot more having written it out. A person steals it without the consent of the owner, unlawfully made a claim of right, made in good faith, takes in car. And I can remember all the things. But what I wanted to say was this. At the end of the course, we had an examination, 4 days. We'd been up to the Black Museum in London with one of the very high pathologists in our country. I've forgotten his name now, but he took us to the Black Museum where they showed us all these murder things and so on. It was a very intense course. The day of the exam came, and I am not joking, when the papers were turned over, I looked at it, I thought, I can't believe that. And I look on the wall, and I can literally see what I'd been writing down. I had no trouble. I got 98% on my exam anyway. And Frankie Head got 97%. 18 of the other blokes failed the course, the policemen. So
I'm going to stop you there. Harold Morris Metcalf, end of Reel 11.